My name is Leland Masters, and I am a revolutionary. I want to encourage everyone to read Joshua Bloom and Waldo Martin's Black Against Empire, The History and Politics of the Black Panther Party. I don't think there's any way to understand the 20th century without understanding the 60s, and there's no way to understand the 60s without understanding the Black Panther Party. The Black Panther Party came about out of a long meditation that happens in the middle of the 60s, around 1965, where people are asking themselves, okay, now that we've got some amount of formal legal equality, how do we push forward to actual equality, right? And so the civil rights movement had achieved the Voting Rights Act, and it was still trying to figure out how to translate that into actual legislation and actual institutions. But while you could conceivably desegregate lunch counters by passive nonviolent means, you couldn't actually have a sit-in against economic inequality. And people wanted more. And so there were a lot of groups that had a lot of different ideas about how to accomplish this. But the way the Black Panther Party approached the issue was that they would patrol their neighborhoods. And they would be armed with guns, but also with legal knowledge. So Huey Newton, for instance, graduates in 1966 with an associate's degree in law. And he and his friend Bobby Seale, who had worked as a social worker, started patrolling their streets. They were driving around really early on, and they knew that they were going to get pulled over by the police. So the police pull them over, but they managed to get pulled over next to a historically black college. And so the police officer on the scene makes the mistake of reaching across Huey Newton to grab Huey Newton's shotgun, which, by the way, is illegal. And Huey Newton opens the door onto the cop, pushes him over, cocks a shell in the shotgun, points it at the police officer and says, "I'm going to shoot you dead," something to that effect. The police officer calls for backup, but there was nothing illegal that they had done. They have a right to defend themselves if they're assaulted or if somebody tries to steal their property, which the police officer had done. And they're just outside of this historically black college as class is getting out. So there's a crowd that's forming, and they couldn't pin anything on them legally. So the police had to let them go. And at the end of this, Huey Newton gets on top of the car and gives a speech about how the police action in Vietnam has to be resisted and how the police are an occupying army in Oakland. And this was the Black Panther political line. And you can imagine these people were incredibly charismatic. The Black Panther Party was not like any group that you or I have known in our lifetime. The Black Panther Party didn't have to work to get membership. They had people flocking to join the Black Panther Party, especially after the events in Sacramento. People nationwide were petitioning to form Black Panther Party chapters. This tactic worked. They were able to stop police brutality against black people. And eventually, of course, the state of California had to make that illegal. So they passed a law that said you couldn't patrol with armed weapons like that. It's called the Mulford Act in 1967. And so the Black Panther Party came down to Sacramento, and they gave a press statement, and it was in the national news, and this greatly increased their profile. But their old tactic had been made illegal. So they had to change their tactic around a little bit, and this is where they start doing a lot more of the community service. After all, Bobby Seale was a social worker at the time, so they started doing breakfast programs, and they always had their paper out. And from what I understand, the paper came out regularly. It never failed. There's been a lot of propaganda about the Black Panther Party. Even on the left, people likened them to the KKK. A lot of this was just CIA propaganda. The Black Panther Party were never a racist organization. They were always working in coalition with different groups like Yellow Peril in Oakland. And then in Chicago, they worked with the Latin Lords, and they even worked with a group of Appalachians called the Young Patriots. They would march together, the Panthers and the Young Patriots. The Patriots would fly the rebel flag, for instance, if you can imagine that. But that was the genius of Fred Hampton, that he could work together in a coalition that was just that broad. Another bad idea that people have is that they think that the FBI oppression actually decreased the membership of the Black Panthers, but that's not what happened. Actually, when they massacred Fred Hampton, the Black Panthers invited the public to come and view the apartment where he had been murdered so they could see for themselves all of the bullet holes with bullets going into the apartment and none coming out. And this was a real boon to their recruiting. The Black Panthers, for instance, were at the Democratic National Convention in 1968 when the Democratic Party elected Hubert Humphrey to be their candidate in the general election over Kennedy and McGovern, who had gotten the majority of the votes. And so everyone saw this as completely undemocratic, and rightly so. And there were riots, and the Chicago police were beating people over the head, and people in middle America and regular straight white people were just scandalized. Oh, they're beating up white people in Chicago, and you had Mayor Daley on the news using curse words. Oh my goodness. Right. And so the Black Panther Party was a part of all of that. They boycotted the election of 1968. This was the great irony of 1968, because Nixon was not an anti-war candidate, though he intimated that he would be. And Hubert Humphrey was actually an anti-war candidate who had to pretend in public that he was for the war because he was the vice president, and he had to play along with Lyndon Johnson. And so the left boycotted that election. Nixon was elected into office. And it's very unlikely that Hubert Humphrey would have later weaponized the FBI or militarized the FBI against the Black Panthers, for instance. He probably would have pulled us out of Vietnam earlier. It's terrible. But Nixon really believed that the Black Panther Party could pull off a revolution against the U.S. government. And so he had to act, he felt. And so they did these armed raids against the Black Panthers. But again, that's not why the Black Panther Party declined. What actually happened was that Nixon undermined their support base by ending the war. He ended the Vietnam War. He stopped the draft. He put in place affirmative action. So he was bringing black people into the middle class in the public sector. And also, he opened up trade with China. And once Nixon opened up trade with Mao Zedong's China, Mao stopped supporting the Black Panther Party. And this is very typical of Mao Zedong, to support an insurgent group in another country when it was convenient for him. And then once he had gotten what he needed out of the situation, he would abandon them. Right? So the Black Panther Party was largely a victim of its own success. You had a lot of white liberal and socialist groups who were supporting the Black Panthers. And then when the war was over, they weren't interested in black liberation or in revolutionary ideology anymore, and they withdrew their support. And so that's really why the Black Panther Party declined. The typical idea you have of the 60s is that, oh, wow, there was a civil rights movement, and that got rid of racism. And then there was a terrible war in Vietnam, and the white college students got upset about it, so they had to stop all that. And that's not what happened at all. There was actually a revolutionary movement led by the Black Panther Party that threatened the U.S. government, and they had to end it. I want to read the last two paragraphs of this book in their entirety, because they are so brilliant. The political clarity on display here is striking. The authors reflect on the current political moment. They focus on the inability of any of today's so-called revolutionaries to appeal to society as a whole, which tells you that the phenomenon of the Black Panthers was a mass democratic movement. The book was published in 2013. I leave it to you to decide how applicable this is 7 years later. Quote, "While many movements with revolutionary ideologies abound, there is no politically significant revolutionary movement in the United States today, because no cadre of revolutionaries has developed ideas and practices that credibly advance the interests of a large segment of the people. Members of revolutionary sects can hawk their newspapers and proselytize on college campuses until they are blue in the face, but they remain politically irrelevant. Islamist insurgencies with deep political roots abroad are politically significant, but they lack potential constituencies in the United States. And ironically, at least in the terrorist variant, they tend to reinforce rather than challenge state power domestically because their practices threaten rather than build common cause with alienated constituencies within the United States. No revolutionary movement of political significance will gain a foothold in the United States again until a group of revolutionaries develops insurgent practices that seize the political imagination of a large segment of the people and successfully draw support from other constituencies, creating a broad insurgent alliance that is difficult to repress or appease. This has not happened in the United States since the heyday of the Black Panther Party and may not happen again for a very long time. So again, I'm sure I missed something super important. Please at me. I want to encourage everyone to read Black Against Empire. In this Democratic Socialist Almanac, I'm going to review the history of the socialist tradition in the light of the latest scholarship. I'll be talking about the good, the bad, and every one of us living in between. Once we've sorted out how we got here, we'll survey the paths now open to us and begin a discussion of where we want to go. Follow us on Facebook, support us on Patreon, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from.